here. How do you feel about the American Males theme song? Banger or the most banger?
Hey-o. You people know who I am and why I'm here. It's Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrick Taylor, she, they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and making it everyone else's problem. This week, historically even, in many ways, our esteemed victim is...
Hello, I'm Sophie, she, her. I am mutuals with you on Blue Sky, I guess I got your attention through my YouTube channel. I do video essays on transgender ancient history. I'm also a voice coach and a novelist.
Yes, and you are wonderful at all of these things.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for being my mutual, which, as we all know, is all it takes to have me ask you on the pod. And sure enough, you got the call. And absolutely, everyone, go check out this YouTube channel. It's fantastic. If you ever wanted to learn all kinds of wonderful things, I get to occasionally blow my kiddo's mind with things like how folks used to get estrogen back in the day, things of that nature. And like, yes, as far as we could tell, yes. go check out those wonderful things. It is so much fun. So I'm very happy you're here, and welcome to a different sort of history show, a history of, in a lot of ways, the world's worst people, and especially in my country, various dominoes that have led to the hellscape that we are making everyone's problem as well. Yay! So, what is your... relationship, if any, with wrestling? Are you a fan? Are you not at all a fan? Are you a fan?
Yeah, so I've watched wrestling here and there. I would not say I'm a fan. I'm not not a fan. It was not really something I was ever exposed to. My mom, when I was a kid, was very... she's gotten a lot better now, but she was... She really bought into the, like, I was born in the 80s, and so the, like, 80s hysteria about, like, oh my god, these things are gonna corrupt our children and turn them into violent maniacs and stuff. So, I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons. So I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons, but Ren and Stimpy was okay. Make that make sense.
That is a wild one. Especially given, you know, hindsight.
Oh my god, yeah. Big time. So I never really watched it when I was a kid. When I got older, I came to really enjoy watching some of the promos that they did. Especially Macho Man Randy Savage. I've always loved his promos. He is such a character. We were going to do a podcast. One of us had to cancel, and then the other had to cancel. So I ended up watching 4 episodes of wrestling, and I have watched more wrestling, my friend, in the last, 2 weeks, 3 weeks or something, whatever it's been, than I have watched in like the rest of my life put together. So that tells you my background in this very strange world.
Awesome. Well, you know, that's a fantastic way of putting it. And also further proof that, someone in the business with money should be giving me some of it, because I keep doing this for y'all. I keep sending people your way, and I'm just saying, pay me. No, that is fan-fucking-tastic. I'm so happy to have corrupted you. this is my version of Mystery Science Theater, and I'm just seeing what I can do to my mutual's brains. And my good friend Kennedy has been on 3 times now, and... They're just like, I'm seeing stuff that I don't quite understand, but I'm starting to understand it, and I don't like that. So imagine how I feel doing this every week. So thank you for undertaking this undertaking. Though no Undertaker this week, thank God. But yeah, it's a historic night. In a lot of ways, folks, it's the end of Act 1 and the beginning of Act 2 of the Monday Night Wars in a lot of ways. If we were to do this like a ancient Mediterranean opus, like I feel like we're out of the Iliad, we're heading into Odyssey. Like you know, you thought the war was won, but now the real battle begins. sort of deal. So like this is a wild night. And on that note, do you have a preference on which show we start with? Because it could go either way here. Do you have a preferred one?
Which was the one that had Razor Ramon insulting Eric Bischoff?
Giving away the game. Nitro. Yeah, well, we might as well start with Nitro.
Okay, sounds good.
The way you put that makes me so happy because, like, isn't that great? Yes. No, keep doing it. I'm fine with this.
Right on.
So, yeah, right off the bat, everything has kind of changed because we're live, which is normal for Nitro. It's not Bischoff. It's Tony Schiavone. That's right, kids. AEW's own Tony Schiavs. He's now on commentary for the first hour of Nitro with the living legend, Larry Zbyszko. I can't help, Sophie, you can tell everyone that I instinctually did the thing he does with his hand to his head in the little twirl. I can't say his name without doing that because I'm that type of nerd. I am so sorry. It will happen again. so we have to wait a whole hour for Bobby Heenan, which is the worst part of all, really, for longtime listeners. But for you, it's pretty all right because we get straight to the graps. We have Horsemen versus the American Males.
I can't imagine a more generic, boring, uninteresting persona than American Males. like what the hell is their deal? Like, I mean, I know it's a like every culture seems to have their own form of like weird ass wrestling, right? Like there's Mexican wrestling, there's like there's sumo, there's a bunch of them, right? But like is Nitro, is that WCW or WWE? That's, I forget.
American wrestling, yes.
Okay. Well, either way, it's like a distinctly American form. And I know like different guys play at the nationalism angle in different ways. There's what's his name? Hulk Hogan with his Real American song and everything like that. But like, it's like the most like distilled down. So I live in Canada. There's a grocery store chain here called No Frills. Anybody who is Canadian who's listening to this might know where I'm going with this. No Frills. They have and Loblaws in general. There's a bunch of different brands. So they have a type. They have a like store brand. It's called No Name. And No Name products are all like this very it's a like primary yellow background, black text, and it just says the name of the thing. So if you have a like, I don't know, a can of beans, it'll just say beans in like big black text. And it's like there's something like distinctly Soviet about it in a way. It's like
it's what my country thinks communism is it's all you get, everyone gets the same toothbrush and it says toothbrush on it, like you know, and like that's you want, that yeah but yeah, yeah, to finish
you want beans, you have beans here, beans for you.
This is a bad Russian accent. I'm sorry. I probably just offended millions of people. I'm very sorry, everybody.
None of them listen to this show. That's fine.
That's fair. So anyway, the point I'm trying to get at is like the American Males persona is like the like No Name brand of like I just imagine like a No Name rapper and it just says like wrestler on it. Yes. Like it's so boring. Everyone else has a shtick, and like some of them are stupid, some of them are fun, but like they're all kind of interesting, sort of. But like American males, like
now nice. This is I was 8 at the time, so I came to the American males very late. By the time I knew of Marcus Bagwell, he was Buff Bagwell, and he was already a whole different thing. So all I knew about the American males is that their theme song is just. You know, I ask here, how do you feel about the American Males theme song? Banger or the most banger? Because it's everything on the tin. You know, it's just, these are fuckboys. These are American fuckboys that look like Abercrombie and Fitch models. You know it smell crazy in there. That's it. Like, and I don't know. People seemed to like it. I can only go off of what the audience is giving us when we watch these historical documents, you know. The audience seemed to like these fuckboys a whole lot. I'm not into it. as far as a gimmick goes, outside of the song, the whole thing just makes me go, ugh. To Sean, because I had people, certain authors on the internet, S.E. Ransdell, looking at you, Liz, had tried to come on here and not let us know that they're actually Canadian just because they live in the country now. There's laws against that. You can't do that. It's called the heart clause. You have to let us know. if you're a Canadian icon, you have to let us know. Otherwise, it's entrapment. So way to get that one in under there. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But all that to say, I agree with you. That being said, though, they're good as far as wrestling goes. This match is very solid. They're young, but they're good. And they're fighting Arn Anderson and Ric Flair, who famously can get a good match out of anything. I've seen them have matches with guys I'm not sure realized where they were, and it went great. So like they're very good at this. Yoshihiko, you probably don't know. Do you know what Yoshihiko is? Probably not.
I sure don't.
Oh gosh, Yoshihiko is a wrestling, I think it started as like a sex doll, like a blow-up sex doll, but it's like a crash test dummy, like beanbag doll with a face that wrestles. This it has a record. They have they them pronouns. They have won championships in Japan.
and it's not a person. It's a doll.
It's a doll. Okay. There's a person who wears all black who will walk them out to the ring and do like the movements. But then you get them in the ring and it's just a doll. And just this last weekend, a man who is known lovingly as Murder Grandpa tells you everything you need to know. He's an old Japanese man who is a shoot wrestler. This guy will kill you so many ways. Minoru Suzuki, he's amazing. I love him. Apparently, he's also low-key one of the greatest comedy wrestlers of all time because he had a match against this doll, and it was brilliant. And I love this. A lot of people, a lot of guys, a lot of American males, will say, with fragile-like egos, in the business will shit, usually older ones will shit on this kind of stuff because it gives the game away, because you go out, you're showing that most of what wrestling is the person who's doing most of the work is the person who's taking, because the doll will DDT this guy and he sells it like he just got DDT'd by a person. You know, the doll will have an arm wrapped around his leg and he's selling it like he's got him in an ankle lock, and it gives the game away. But it was a great match. He has great matches. Yoshihiko. I would love to see these guys, Flair, 90s Flair, wrestle that guy, because it's exactly, maybe not Flair, because Flair's whole thing is getting his ass kicked in style, so maybe that wouldn't work so well. But it's proof that, like, you can, I think it came about because people used to say Flair could have a good match with a broomstick. And people in Japan were like, wait, can we get a broomstick? can we test that? sure enough, it's good stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. I noticed, like, one of the things I thought was interesting was, like, they kept trying to push Ric Flair as, like, a ladies man and, like Mr. Handsome and, like, I don't know, he looks like such a doofus. Like, I'm not into dudes, so, like, I'm not really one to be making such calls. I don't know, but I can appreciate a handsome man when he's a handsome man. There are some of these guys that are like, okay, well, you know, men aren't my thing, but if they were, maybe I could see that. Ric Flair just seems like such a doofus. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
I think that, well, that's the kind of the thing is that he says all this, and they play it up, but in reality, if he's a ladies, Ric Flair isn't playing a character. That's just who he is. He wants you to think he's playing a character, but that's very much just who he is as a person. Yeah. Not great. Not a great guy. And like they play it up because in the 70s, it played. In the 90s, it is goofy. that's kind of a sign of the times and a lot of why tonight is historic in a lot of ways. As far as the match itself, it's pretty great. You know, the train take team offense. It's Flair keeps running away to his VIP table to hide behind woman with a champagne bottle. That's great. That's what he's a heel. He's the bad guy. He runs away and lets everyone, you know, not brave about it, basically. I ask myself, if Ric Flair were in the Coliseum, would he have begged off from the tiger about to maul his face? You know, like, he was sold it. That's what he's good at. Everything, he's like, please don't kick my ass, and getting his ass kicked very well. It's his whole thing. He would have worn a white tunic so it looked good when he got color, you know? These are the thoughts that keep me up at night, you know? So we come back from a commercial. Bagwell is sending Flair flying with black backdrops. This match continues to cook. But while this is going on, I guess at one point Flair is like serving Tony and Larry champagne at the booth while his partner is like in the and stuff that I love wrestling because it's so pain. Meanwhile, he's probably gonna get his ass kicked, but he wants you to think he's on top of it, you know? But I as far as that goes, Larry says it's a class act. Matt made me giggle, and apparently I think it made Tony try not to giggle. You can hear him like trying not to giggle at how ridiculous it is. And I'm just happy he's here. Tony Schiavone is now in the future an institution. You know what I mean? We are in the era of this fandom where institutions are continuing to be made, you know? But that's also kind of what's fun about wrestling and what made me kind of want to have you on too. Cause I was like, all the stuff you talk about, I'm like, these are just people making myths in real time. You know, like that's a lot of what wrestling is you're telling these stories as though they happened 1,000 years ago because you have this pomp and circumstance to it. But really it was last week, you know?
Yeah. And like, even if I'm not like, everybody knows who a lot of these characters are. Like everyone's heard of Ric Flair, right? Like, even though I watched more wrestling in the last couple of weeks than I have in the rest of my life put together, I still knew who Ric Flair was. I still know who like Stone Cold Steve Austin is and like all these like, you know,
bigger names,
bunch of them. And like I'm into heavy metal, so I know who Triple H is, and I like, and etc. So like, it's almost like it is making mythology, but it's like this is mythology because we've decided that it's mythology, and enough people collectively have decided that this is an important story that's being told, and that really kind of gets to the core of like what these what stories in general are. They are important because we decide that they're important, and enough people have made them important that they become important. It is because it is. From a like logic perspective, it is A because of A, which is true, but it doesn't really go anywhere. But in this case, it doesn't matter because it still works.
Yeah, right. And I think that, oh, that gets into a lot. Oh, God. Yeah, exactly. And that gets into why tonight is a domino towards the regime we're dealing with now. We'll get there. So to skip over the rest of this match, because honestly, folks, just watch it. It's the Horsemen, and yes, the American males are the American males, but they can go. It ends with some fuckery. Eventually, woman pokes Buff's eye out behind the ref's back, and he goes to yell at her, which is enough distraction for Arn to DDT the other guy for the win, like you do. The Horsemen bring in this new Nitro with the win, and they head to the VIP table to talk to me and Gene about it. Eat some fake food, you know, waxy cheese, as Bobby later calls it, because there's no way they're putting real food to just sit out there. And that we're getting to the end of this. Like you mentioned, the Ric Flair as woman, like ladies man, it's more womanizer at this point, and this kind of lets us know all about it. Like, because Arn lays out this straightforward player, I couldn't walk over for a better fight. That's a hell of a line, in my opinion. But then after that poetry, what does Rick have for us? Rambling, sweaty, breathy singing of Afternoon Delights and like munching on Liz's arm and letting us know how he's fucking these women so much and spending all of Macho Man's money. And I'm just...
They're so mean to him.
I hate him so much. They're so mean to Macho Man. They are. They're very mean to Macho Man.
Yeah.
No one's mean to Rick, and that's a problem. More people should have been mean to Rick. I'm so... For a while when we're watching, starting the show, we're 39 episodes in, I was still like, you know, I know Ric Flair sucks, but I appreciate what he does. This whole arc has broken me. I am just so sick of Ric Flair, the wife collector, like Pokemon. I'm so done with it. And it's coming to an end because, like, we come back and they show Mongo Liftigar, who was in on commentary for a while. And then for every week, Rick would go out to the crowd and try to fuck Mongo. They've run this for like a month now. I saw the face he made there for a second and went, yes, exactly. Like, really? Yes. So this is what passes as storytelling right now in 1996. So we get to see Mongo and his football buddy pumping weights, being straight.
It was so funny.
It was so wild.
Video quality too. It's like, I don't know what it is. Like, there's a filter on it, and also they've slowed it down to like 4 or 5 frames per second. It's so weird.
In the chat, and that's like a thing. And I'm trying to think if did more stuff in the 90s do that, or was it just wrestling? Because like wrestling does it a lot.
I think other stuff did. Like I could fully just be making up this memory right now, but
yes.
I feel like there are like episodes of Saved by the Bell that have a similar sort of filter to them.
Yes,
but thank you. I could be wrong. Somebody, you know, leave a comment below if I'm wrong. I don't know if there's a comment section of this, but whatever.
There is on most pop places. Feel free to do on Spotify or yell at us on Blue Sky where we exist. But yeah. Yes, no, I would like to know, because you say Saved by the Bell and all of a sudden it tracks. I'm like, yes, no, I do remember this. But no, that was a thing in the 90s, I think. And now I'm remembering more. See, funny how memory's so weird like that. At one point, Kevin Green looks at the camera and says, oh yeah, coming hard, baby. And I just, all right, cool. Yeah, to quote a former guest, really? Like, really? You're still really? Like, this is okay. Yeah, this is okay. Yeah, I don't know what else to do with that. We we come back from commercial, and it's starting to look a little weird. And now I'm starting to kind of like, okay, because it's Graps, but there's this guy named Steve Dahl, beautiful head of hair, and I'm like, okay, yes, Steve Dahl, yes, she is. Get it, girl. His opponent is a Colonel Parker joint, a guy named the Mauler. I know these guys as well as you at this point. I didn't know these guys either, so I did a little bit of Googling. The Mauler is Blake Beverly, a former WWF wrestler who folks would know as Blake Beverly. And the other guy's also a WWF guy. So these are like His Steve Dahl was his actual name. He was Steve Dunn in the WWF, part of a tag team called Well Done, D-U-N-N, which says a lot about the state of wrestling in 1993. So, like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, why are these guys here? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, crowd's losing their shit, but not for the match. Here comes Scott Hall in a Denim Dan fit for the ages walking through the crowd. Do you know much about this moment or the NWO at all, Sophie?
I not really. I saw the t-shirts that kids wore when I was when I was a kid, and I don't know. I mean, I think you and I were talking about it a little bit. I was just briefly looking up to make sure that Colonel Parker is not the same as Colonel Tom Parker, who was Elvis Presley's manager, who he is not. In case anybody else listening is also unfamiliar with this shit.
Colonel Rob Parker. And yes, that's why he stole the gimmick.
Yeah, I see this. His Wikipedia page says he is a takeoff of Colonel Tom Parker of Elvis Presley fame. So not the same guy. Would have been impressive fall from grace if it were fall from Graceland, but so no, I don't know much about I don't know much about the NWO.
Well, this is the start of it. He comes out, everyone's acting like, what the hell's going on? He asks for a mic, everyone's confused. It's my understanding, though, like, he just gets right in the ring and everyone kind of lets him. And this is where the disconnect for me as a grown-up is, because my understanding is that one of the great joys of being a pro wrestler is that someone who is not working for your company comes out of the crowd and rushes the ring. You are within your right and encouraged to beat the ever-loving fuck out of them to protect the business, to make them think that it's real. So the fact that no one did that should tell anyone that Scott's working here, which is like, yeah, I've seen many shoot interviews. These guys talk about it as a perk, which I think is very funny. So I think also Scott Hall is huge, so it helps. The other question, though, I have for you as the current
Scott Hall is Razor Ramon, right?
Yes, Razor Ramon. Okay. So him. You know him as Razor Ramon.
Well, so I had to look him up because I didn't recognize him. I'd never seen him before. So I looked him up and I saw Razor Ramon, but I didn't know that was his, I didn't know he had an IRL name. I figure, his mom just called him Little Razor.
Little Raze. Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm so used to like living and existing in queer community that once these guys jump from one promotion to another, I just forget their old names. It's like, oh, nope, that's his dead name now. But no, Vince McMahon. Yeah. Right. We're trained. Vince McMahon, being the monster that he is, he has this thing where, like, if you work for his company, he owns you now. And that means that you need a new name that he can trademark. Like, when Scott Hall came in, like, you got to have a gimmick and we'll come up with a name. And Scott Hall was like, I've been making the boys laugh by doing an Al Pacino and Scarface impression. So he throws it at Vince, and Vince is like, this is great. Yeah, Razor Ramon, there you go.
Is that what he's going for, Pacino?
So, like, that's his whole... Razor Ramon's whole thing is Pacino and Scarface.
Oh, my God. I thought he was just a Spanish guy.
Yeah. No, not at all.
I don't know. This is my first and last experience with him so far. My knowledge of this man begins and ends with the footage we've watched here. So.
Oh, that's exquisite. See, this is why I love doing this show and getting those reactions from people who have no fucking idea, because it's wild to me. So he got you. You actually thought he might have been Cuban. No, Scott Hall is from like Florida, I think. Like, he's a very white dude. Yeah, right. I mean, he used to work in my neck of the woods in Minneapolis in the AWA, and he was big Scott Hall, and he had like a big mustache and looked like a lumberjack, and like he did not look Cuban at all. Did not talk amazing. He got you, folks. Write it down, mark it. Scott Hall got the accent over on at least one person. That's fantastic.
Is that why he's such a god awful actor then? Yeah. Because he's doing like a stupid voice at this. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I didn't realize.
Yeah. And he's going real, he talks real slow because it'll piss off everyone that wants him to finish his sentence. Like, that's why he talks like that. It's a heel move to piss people off by wasting their time. These are tricks of the trade, you know, like this is, and he's good at what he does. First and foremost, though, as the current Canadian here, I have to ask, thoughts on the Canadian tuxedo he has going on? Sleeveless denim vest with the jeans? You know, it's a choice.
I mean, it's a good look. It's a good look. I vibe.
I know I will probably get me put on a list, but let's be fair, I was already on one. I love it. I love the denim. I love maple syrup. I love me the Hart family. Joni Mitchell, great stuff. You know, we got a lot of good stuff from Canada. Your YouTube, you know, there you go. Like a good handful of shit posters I like. All right, I could go on forever. Please stop tariffing, my friends. Please stop. So you people, you know who I am. Yeah, I don't know why I'm here. He says, where, oh, where is billionaire Ted? And where, oh, where is the Nacho Man? And this is reference to, we've been at the McMahon was totally not mad. Don't put in the paper that he's mad. And he would, at the end of his show, have these little skits where he would make fun of Ted Turner, who owns WCW, with a character called Billionaire Ted. And he would make fun of his former wrestlers and his friends, Macho Man and Hulk Hogan, by calling them Nacho Man and the Huckster and Scheme Gene. So these are references to WWF product, right? That's important. That will be important for later. And it's also important that he's doing the Razor Ramon voice. That's key here. Because people at the time, you know, they thought that this is Razor Ramon. He doesn't come out and say, I'm Scott Hall. He says, you know, that punk came and get in the building, says all his stuff. People are meant to think that this is a WWF wrestler showing up unannounced at a WCW show. And I've heard of people at the time watching Raw and like getting calls from friends saying, switch to Nitro now, now, now. Razor's at Nitro declaring war. You know, like they thought that this was Razor Ramon coming over from the other company. So he ends his promo with a line from Scarface, like everything else. You want to go to war? You want a war? You got a few. But there's instant heat there. And it's, everyone's just kind of trying to figure out what's going on. Tony's like, what about the match? And Larry's like, the match left, you know, like, they're gone. But what's wild about this is, like, they come back and they try to act like it's business as usual, but this is the beginning of what Josie Reisman would call neo-kayfabe. What, I have a friend named Carl who is a academic who does far-right research. He has this concept he calls weaponized unreality. This is the beginning of that. Because what they're doing is they are blending what people know to be reality and the fictional realities in such a way that the average person watching this wasn't entirely sure which was which. And basically, that becomes the modus forward because of this night. This night went so well. It created such a bang by this happening, like 20 minutes into the show, that it changed how wrestling knew to be real and what the fictional story was. And they started taking elements of people's real life stuff and putting it into stories. And it was basically the wrestling business adapting to the fact that everyone knew what was going on and we had more connection. You know, the internet starting to be a thing. So, like, people who are smart on stuff can talk about it, right? So, like, basically. And the problem is that this basically has become the playbook of the fascists that are now inhabiting my government. Is they're like, oh, we can flood reality with bullshit to the point where no one knows what's real and what isn't. And that makes it literally impossible to do a democracy by breaking reality by doing neo-kayfabe. And they all learned it from wrestling because Trump's best friend is Vince McMahon. And he's been a friend of, Trump has been going to watch WWF wrestling since he was a small child. This is where he got it. And yeah. So again, Josie Reisman has a whole book about it. Go check it out. This is the night that kind of, it's a domino. It's a domino in that meme. You know what I mean? I'm blabbering, but yes, that's what makes this historic. It's not just a guy in a snazzy denim Dan outfit. It's a guy doing a terrible Al Pacino accent, though it's also that. He's breaking reality and showing people that you can, and he's going to get a lot of people really rich doing it. So yeah, that's that. That's the, there's more, and we're only 25 minutes into Nitro. So yes, look, you're here for a history. You did it. Wild stuff. But much like them, we come back and have to kind of act like it never happened, which is, interesting. Meanwhile, Psy, though, we get Craig Pittman. Larry Zbysko says that he was mean and badass and knew what bugs to eat for protein in the wild. And I'm declaring him my new Mongo because holy shit.
Your new what?
Michael, the guy who was doing the weightlifting, he used to comment kind of like Larry Zbysko does now. And he would just say the most outlandishly nonsensical shit. Made me realize that he's an agent of chaos. You have to embrace the fact that this man just says shit. It's like Mongo McMichael is like the Charlie Brown head hose of wrestling commentators. You can just say things on the internet. You can just say whatever. And he embodied that. And Larry seems to be taking that over. This pleases me. And out comes DDP to the song Self High Five, which is familiar. It's not Nirvana. We swear to God it's not Nirvana. Please don't sue us for ripping off Nirvana. And this match is also, even though DDP is being very DDP-ish. He calls him the new American Dream, and I'm like, if the American Dream is, I don't know, you're Canadian. Is the American Dream a curly mullet and a big cigar? I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know what the American Dream is. I think it's, I mean, my American Dream is to not be American. So I don't know. I guess I'm living the dream.
I was going to say, I love this for you. I can tell you the American Dream is currently a nightmare. It was never a dream. It was always horseshit.
Yeah, it always has been as far as I've been old enough. I mean, I was born here. I was born in 1985. My parents lived in Florida until 1984, and they moved back to Canada. They were both born here, but they moved back to Canada because they wanted to have kids here. And every chance I get, I thank them for for not having me, not just in the U.S., but in Florida in the U.S.
Oh my God. Yeah. No,
I have friends in Florida. I there are wonderful people in Florida, but yeah, there's a lot of not so wonderful God people there too.
Yeah. I was going to say there's wonderful people in Florida and I worry for them every day. But yeah, speaking of Florida, DDP, I think he's actually from Georgia, but he's an honorable mention Florida man. DDP is interesting because he's at this point, he's getting into wrestling. He's in his 40s already at this point, which is old, especially back then, for him to be getting into it. He was just he worked at a strip club. He was a bouncer at a strip club. That was his thing. And he knows all these wrestlers because they'd hang out at the strip club. And they're like, Dally, you should get in on this. He's like, all right, I'll do the thing. So it turns out at one point he's making fun of Pittman and tries to get him to do push-ups, says drop down and give me 20. And Pittman does 1.5 one-arm push-ups and DDP goes to kick him. Now when Pittman moves, it's like the perfect Charlie Brown missing the football.
Yeah, very goofy.
nailed it. And I was just like, again, professional wrestling is better than that thing you like. I like it because he did that to himself and it was beautiful. And this whole match is kind of that. That's the whole story. Is DDP making Pittman look good because Pittman sucks and DDP is amazing. He's a hidden gem for me, no pun intended. I didn't know how great he was growing up. And now going back and watching this, I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. Almost to prove my point, Pittman tries to put his own finishing move. Like, he doesn't even know how to do his own move right. He does this, like, arm bar, but it's backwards.
Amazing.
I'm sighing deeply because long-time listeners know I had, like, written this guy off. I thought he was gone. I thought I was done with Pitbull Pittman. Apparently not. thankfully, though, done with him for tonight because he gets the shit diamond cuttered out of him out of nowhere, as DDP will do.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
He just kind of, boom, hits him, and that's going to become a thing for him. Like, part of his signature is just he can hit that finisher out of anywhere. And it becomes a meme later on the internet, because another wrestler takes it and calls it an RKO. So, like, the idea of an RKO out of nowhere becomes a meme of a mercy killing. I need this guy to be done. So we come back from that. There's a rocking video montage torturing Macho Man, and calling him crazy while torturing him. And finally they put it in just a tight music package. Yay. And that's that.
They're
so mean to him.
And I don't like it.
Him. No, he's good. He's savage. Like, just leave him be. Yeah. He's just trying to live in his madness.
Let him do his thing.
Yeah. He just wants to eventually drop an elbow on a hamster. You've seen the GIF. If you haven't, go on Blue Sky. It's there. The guy's weird, but I love him. He just wants us to snap into Slim Jims.
His album, right?
Oh, fuck yeah.
My girlfriend hadn't heard it. So we were eating dinner and I was telling her I'm going to be doing this tonight. And I mentioned the album. He was like, "Wait, what?" I'm like, yeah, and 50 Cent produced it. She's like, what? So we listened to it, and it is an indescribable music experience.
Did you play for her Be a Man Hulk?
Of course I did.
Oh God, the great I know we all know the wonderful Drake's a Pedophile song. And we all sang it at the Super Bowl, and it was wonderful. Before that, the greatest, greatest feat in hating of all time, Macho Man's Be a Man Hulk. Like, he hates Terry Bollea, as he should.
I mean, seems like he's in good company.
Yeah, as we should. Speaking of people who hate Terry Bollea, we come back from commercial, and here's Shark. this man.
Mark, I'd never heard of this guy before. He's so goofy.
Oh my God, it hurts. Right? Like, you see this guy and you're like, what's up with this man with shark teeth painted on his face? Would you believe me if I told you that this man is a celebrated athlete and a beloved member of the sumo community? What?
At this point, I'll believe just about anything.
Yeah, right? See, you're smart, Sophie, you're getting wrestling. You understand. Suspend that disbelief because you never fucking know. This guy, John Tenta, was a football player in America, and he ended up going and doing sumo and was pretty well respected in the sumo community. And like, he wrestled in Japan as well. They love it, athlete. He's really good. He was in the WWF as Earthquake. He was one of the natural disasters, or Earthquake and... Oh my God, I'm forgetting the other natural disaster. Was it tsunami? No. I can't think of it. He eventually became Tugboat. Oh my God, I can't believe I can't remember. Oh my God. The natural disaster.
Avalanche,
thank you.
I just looked it up.
Oh my God, thank you. You're better at this than me. Thank you for coming on my show and making it work. I I'm the worst Avalanche. I think of him as Tugboat. Oh wait, no,
his name used to be Avalanche.
Oh, he was.
His name used to be Avalanche. In the natural disaster, he was Earthquake alongside Typhoon.
Typhoon, okay. Typhoon, who became Tugboat and eventually the Shockmaster. And then they called him Avalanche, and WWF is like, that's cute, stop it. And they're like, okay, we can't call him Avalanche because it's too close. But it's John Tenta, and like, fuck, man, they did him dirty. And this whole match is this them doing him dirty. Because, like, I guess he's been thrown out of the Dungeon of Goon, which honestly is probably the best thing to happen to them. Those guys are no good. They're constantly
goon. Hold up. The Dungeon of Goon.
They're called the Dungeon of Doom, but we call them the Dungeon of Goon because they're goons.
Okay. Because I was going to say, in the year of our Luigi 2025, goon means something different than it would have back in 1996.
See, and this is it. In 1996, they would have called themselves goons, probably, but they wouldn't have known what it meant. We call them Dungeon of Goon because in the year of our Luigi 2025, yes, this is very good stuff. And fuck them all. They're awful. And again, I forget. I just forget that they have an actual name and not the silly one I gave them. I'm sorry, folks. I hope he's kicked out, which good for him. And okay, this is painful. This is very bad. First, they give us Hulk Hogan a video package talking about all the famous people he knows. This sucks. I have a couple thoughts on this real quick. First of all, now that they're 2 hours long, they're filling more time with video vignettes, and I don't appreciate this. Secondly, this Hulk shit is sad, and I'm starting to understand even more how the broader fan community back then hated him so much, because like he's not even there. He's off filming movies. And sending these video packages about how awesome he is, and he knows all these fans, and he gets booed, which is going to make what eventually happens make sense, because he's going to turn bad guy, and it's like, that's all they needed you to do, because they're going to hate you anyways. So we come back from that ridiculousness. Bischoff is introing round two of Nitro, because he lives in Zabisco, and now we get Bobby and Eric, which, yay Bobby, boo Eric. There's just a fire in the middle of the ramp for some reason. I had to take note of that. I was like the laziest pyro, like someone just paper bag on fire. But yeah, the shark is swimming his way to the ring, hailing from, I wish I was making this up, Tsunami, followed by the world champion, still wrestling for the Dungeon of Doom, with the head, gooning hype man person himself, Jimmy Hart, the giant. Now this match should have banger qualities. If it weren't for the reality of what I'm going to call the what has been done to the giant. Like, basically, he's a big guy. You can see this. You know, Paul White, very tall, very giant. Before hence the name. Also, they wanted to try to make people believe that he was Andre the Giant's kid. That's a real thing. Talking about myth-making. It's like, no, dude. No, you don't even have a French accent. Once they put the belt on him, like, he used to do a lot more in the ring. He's a newer guy. He doesn't know a lot about wrestling, but what's cool about that is that he would try a lot of different stuff. What has been done is they make him act like a big monster. They make him act like a giant. And it kind of hurts, in my opinion, more than works. Especially because he's fighting John Tenta, who is huge. You know, like, you see him.
Yeah, they're both enormous.
Big guy. They're both enormous. Especially when you see, like, the ref next to him, and he's just, like, so tiny. And it doesn't play well, because it's just, like, it's John Tenta. Like, you can't treat John Tenta like Ric Flair. Ric Flair's so tiny. So this match was kind of a snore for me. At one point, though, Tenta goes for a power slam, can't pick him up. And then Giant does something actually really cool and walks around with him before slamming him down. And that's... Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, you have the look on your face of someone who's like, that guy's 500 pounds.
Yeah, at some point the announcers were like, there's almost a ton of man in that ring.
Right? That's a ton.
Like, these are enormous men.
Yeah, that's a ton of man, which is more weightage of man than I ever wanted anyone. One time. So Tenta, you know, really giving it his all, and he's really good at this shit. And they have him painted like a shark. Yay. oh, it bothers me. So Eric tells us a little bit about the new format again as the second hour starts. Bobby does his thing. He says the second hour gets so hot, you got to wear asbestos. And I was like, all right, cool. I missed you. The giant does something for the win and like gets him up on one arm. And like the trick to the choke slam is that the person taking it is holding on to the person's arm. So they're not actually being picked up by the neck. They're being picked up by the point of contact on their hand. So like that's the trick. Picking that guy up with like one arm and a hand on the back is fucking wild. And that's why it's staged, and it's important to make that difference, because like it's still, they're still doing strongman shit. But now something sad.
Oh, happens. Yeah, like that's something that I thought was really interesting, was like it's not a yes, it's staged, all that stuff, but at the same time, like the acrobatics and the athleticism are really impressive. And like, I don't know, it makes me think of like I don't know, Cirque du Soleil or something like that, where it's like, really? Like it's fake. No, it's not fake. It's just, it's like you said, it's staged, which is staged. I don't know. It's neato. Different. Maybe this is a boring thing that everyone talks about on every. anybody who's new to wrestling is going to talk about it on a wrestling podcast, but
you'd be surprised.
Yeah,
it's neato. No, it is neato, and I like showing people how neato it is. It's it's very much just theater. It's very literally stage fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Like different than knowing how to throw a work punch, where like you're pulling it, but it still looks like it's hit. So it's an art in the medium is John Tenta, which makes this very sad. Because out of nowhere, a new gooner named Bubba comes out and shaves half of Tenta's hair. This is one of the saddest things to happen to John Tenta, in my opinion. It's a disgrace, as Eric says, but for the different reasons. Because for the story, keep his hair like that for like a month. Like in real life, like this guy has to like go out with his kids, and like half of his hair is shaved.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and it's like, this guy was a celebrated athlete. Like, you know, like, Bobby likes it. He's laughing hysterically as we go to commercial. I am sad. we come back for a TV title match. We have Max with two X's. I don't know this guy, but holy heck and meat. It's just meaty man. Google tells me this is Max Muscle, and he has a new share-like one-name gimmick. And I was like, okay, I know this guy. So with one X, good hot dog man.
Max, yeah, Muscle. Lex Luger's he's the blonde guy, right?
He's the blonde guy who is very...
Pretty boy.
Yeah, very pretty boy. He makes his boobies dance, you know, he flexes and makes them dance and stuff, and he's got the tassels. Whereas Max... Max had mullet, and then he shaved just the sides in like a too wide mohawk kind of deal. And used to just go, yeah, he went by the name Max Muscle, and he had like a mullet. And it looks like they're like, we're just going to shave the size of your head and call you Max. And new gimmick, I guess. And it worked. I had to look him up. I was like, oh, wait, he was here before. What the fuck? This match is, it's meaty men slapping meat. Some sloppy power slams, lots of headlocks. It's not much to write home about, so I didn't write much. But in the middle of the match, Eric keeps talking about how he's like, well, the guy wants to come out here. To them, they are acting their asses off. Like, I kind of love it. This is the most effort any of these guys. Because, yeah.
What? Oh, go ahead. So maybe you can answer this. Please. And like, again, I know it is staged, and to a certain extent, I don't know how much, you ever watch Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh yeah, back in the day, yes.
So where it's like the rules are made up and the points don't matter,
yes.
Or something like that. How did Lex Luger win this match? He didn't pin him.
So,
did he win? Like, what's happening here? Did they just decide that he won all of a sudden?
He got him in. So what eventually happens is a lot of this happens. We get a lot of the Neo kayfabe again because they continue to talk off screen. They have a match picture rack. Now, he did what is called a submission So basically, he made him say uncle. He made him give up. The going like this a bunch hurt so much that the guy said, I give up, I give up, I give up. So, like, that's how he won. He didn't pin him. He made him give up by putting him up.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's that match, really. <It's> just, that's the whole thing. So, yes, happy to explain that. It's a little goofy. Generally, you can win by pinning him for three or making him say uncle. Or if you knock them down and they can't get up for a 10 count. But all of that is usually kind of like by the ref's discretion. That it's very much like Whose Line Is It Anyway. At a certain point, it's the rules become whatever we need to get the match across. You know what I mean? Like, whatever we need to make it work. So like there's a rule where if you throw the guy over in WCW only, if you throw the guy over the top rope intentionally, theoretically that's a disqualification and you lose because you can hurt the guy. Nowhere else is this a rule. Nowhere else. And in WCW, it's only a rule when they need it to be. And like, it's very funny watching this stuff going, that should have been but only when it makes sense. They say, well, that's it. Very much is kind of improv in that way. They're like, whatever makes it work. So Lex wins, blah de blah. He gives a okay promo. I don't really care that much. Lex is, it's fair enough. It's an 8 out of 10 for him. Not very good at it. And it's like, he got across. They show him getting choke slam through a table. That's very cool. All of this is good. Mean Gene says that putting Giant in the rack would be almost an impossible mission, reminding us that Mission Impossible just came out, the first one. So we all feel old watching this, of like the seventh one just came out. Yeesh. And then, yes, after commercial, we got another new guy that I don't know. Tells us that he comes out of the power plant, which is like WCW's wrestling school, basically. So they're like, I think that this, I don't know, it's 2 hours. I guess they're like, let's throw a lot of new guys out there, you know, because there's a whole lot of like guys I didn't recognize on this show. Might as well, you know.
I liked this guy. I liked his vibe.
I like his vibe a lot. And he was fighting Brad Armstrong, whose vibe I dislike. And that also helped. And now, like, to kind of show us if he can work. And he absolutely does. I don't recognize his name, which doesn't bode well for him, like, you know, being around for a while, unfortunately. But it was a really good match. Eric at one point says that Bobby is known for Bobby, not Heenan, Bobby, the wrestler, Bobby Walker, is known for watching film and studying it like a thesis because they want to make it seem like real sports. You know, they're like football players, like watching film. And Bobby Heenan, taking this opportunity, he's like, you know what that is? Yeah, Bobby says, yeah, I know film. Eric's like, no, a thesis. And like, who is she? Isn't she the one that does the dance with the monkey? I was like, God damn it, Bobby.
You're really clever.
I love him. He's the best. Bobby has been at this. He's a veteran at this. And like, he's got that old humor where it's like stand up, you know, back in like smoky clubs kind of vibe. And like, just, it's so, no one does it quite like him. Larry's trying. Larry Zbysko's trying. We'll see if he gets better. Bobby tries to work out Rick's plan while all this is going on too. And he thinks that Mongo adding Deborah to his collection so he can ride high on Mongo's pension money. this is it. This is wrestling in 1996. It's awful. But what isn't awful is Bobby Walker going for lucha shit. He like tries to do a double jump to the top and he slips a little. But everyone
does that twice, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does it, and like everyone kind of gives him like the hell yeah, and I was like, see, this is great. It's a new guy doing new shit, and the crowd doesn't like destroy him. So I hope he comes back. I feel like if he went out there and slipped, he's gonna go in the back, and they're gonna be like, you're never working again. You know what I mean? Like sometimes the business back then, especially, was that rough. More so in WWE because Vince is a fucking maniac. Yeah, and also very racist. Well, everyone, the whole business was at this point, but I was just like, God, I hope they don't hold that against him, because he went for it, and that's cooler than a lot of guys were doing. And it works, too. He goes for the finisher. He left the tree. It's great. The crowd loves him. I want to see more of this man. We come back from commercial, and Lord Steven Regal and Jeeves, I guess apparently your countryman, as Canada's, isn't technically Commonwealth of England still, isn't it? So I don't know how this works. Soon
I mean,
I no comment.
I don't want to be associated with those people.
Yeah,
there are some wonderful people in England. Of course, yes, there are. There are of lots course. Of wonderful people in England, but
there's good know. People on both sides. Both sides, wonderful people.
yeah, but that's not. That's
neither here nor there, and
we're not British.
Yeah, we're not British. Damn it. And no. Soon in my country, we won't be allowed to learn the difference. This guy, I love this guy. He's a lord, but he speaks like he was raised in like the lowest of low class in England, because he was. And I love this.
But it doesn't matter, because to like the average American, like they just hear a British accent and they're like, oh, this person is so posh.
What is he, some sort of royal? I'm like, yeah, make him a lord. That's literally it. They're like, you're British, you're a lord. And he's just like, I'm... And poor Steven Regal is like a journeyman wrestler. Like, he's like really good. They talk about it. He's like, they talk about how he fought in India and stuff. That's real. Because in England, in English wrestling, that's what you do on the off seasons. You would go to Germany and Japan and India and all these other places and wrestle on the off season, and then come back and wrestle on the on season in England. So like, that's true. And like, Regal is amazing, which is what makes this match really pretty fucking good. It's a Euro match, cause he's fighting Das Wunderkind, and he comes out and he has the leather and the hair, and he says, was ever, I am das cool. And there's no way that this does, cause like, these guys are both really good. Sometimes I don't take many notes because the grabs are awful. That's happened once already, I think, so far. Sometimes, though, I don't take many notes because the grabs are just exquisite. And this is the latter. So, like, folks, watch this match. Steven Regal is perfect, basically, at everything he does, because he's out. He knows what he's doing. He's out there to make all these Americans hate him. And does a very good job at it. And, it's just...
Americans love hating people that are not born in America.
We make it very easy for him. It's true. And he just goes very pompous. And, it's good. Watch it. Bobby Heenan's dropping all manner of heat. Too much to write down. Go listen. Speaking of heat, though, after this match, Regal gets the win and proceeds to drop a fucking promo where, like, telling the truth, like... You're shooting is like the vernacular. He was shooting here. Like he says, this place sucks. Our champion is a Barnum and Bailey escapee. And like he's having none of this. And I think this is all probably his actual feelings. Because he got the job here and like he got put on like the mid card and that's it. And they just said, you're this now. This you're going to be the Brit ever be champion, and you're never going up from here. Like, this is it, enjoy it. And he probably just hated it. Like, he was like, I give me Sting, fuck him, I want to beat him, I want the sideshow freak, I want the gold. And I was just like, this is great. He calls Alex Wright Jr. Adolf, said his dad would be proud of whipping him, and I was like, this is fucking amazing.
Brutal.
What brutal, one of the best to do it. Really good. He also, you know, he talks about how wild it is they got someone coming from a different organization and like all this shit. All of this will, as I said, remember, this will be important because like they didn't use his name, but he uses the accent. He makes references to WWF skits and he says here, Regal says this guy comes in from a different organization. So this ends up in court. WWF takes them to court and says, what the fuck? You are not doing enough to make it clear that this guy doesn't work for us anymore. Like, they got pissed to be like, you're making it look like this is this thing that's happening and we're involved and we're not. And they had to sue them to get them to. So he had to stop talking like that as much. So, like, thankfully, well, maybe not thankfully, Scott Hall had alcohol problems, amongst other things. So he always continued to kind of just talk a little slow. It's just that he was really fucked up the whole time. So you can't really tell the difference. Yeah. So, yay. Regal's so-called painted face clown, Sting, is fighting Scooter Pie Steiner, the single most steroided man in the history of the world. Yeah. And I did have a quick question for you. I was like, this is a good one. About trans HRT in ancient times. I'm wondering, do we know anything about cis HRT in ancient times? What did gladiators do anything to get those, you know, a little extra boost for those sweet gains? Because all of our gladiators are jacked to the gills on human growth hormone and various testosterones.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know of any on all of your, if you've come across anyone like doing the mare's piss, but for testosterone?
That's a really interesting question. I must say, I don't know a whole lot about gladiators and gladiatorial games. I haven't studied it a whole lot. However, from what I know, again, not even close. That might be me. I have microphone issues. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a boring story. So
not knowing much about gladiator stuff, yeah. Which I wasn't sure, but possible the HRT of it all.
Yeah, I do know it was nowhere near as deadly as we think it is. Like we found funerary epigrams of tombstones of gladiators that say, here lies he was a beloved gladiator and fought in the arena for 25 years. Yeah. You don't last 25 years in a place where somebody is trying to kill you every day. You just don't. So like we think it is very similar to professional sports entertainment wrestling, where like it is acrobatic, yes, it is athletic, yes, it is nowhere near as painful as it looks.
Yeah.
Does it still hurt? Yeah, probably. Yeah. But not as much as it looks.
Yes, and we've talked about that before. See him, and like some tour guide told them that, and they're like, so like pro wrestling? The tour guide was like, god damn it, like, yes, yeah, like pro wrestling. And I was like, and now I wonder, did people have signs in the Coliseum, you know, were they on steroids again? These are I was like, you know, if the dolls,
except it would have just estrogen, said John 3:16 as opposed to Austin 3:16.
Yes, and again they would have been talking about like the actual guy. Solid point. But yeah, I was like, no, I have you here, and you taught us about the magic of estrogen and horse piss. I was like, how are trans mass guys getting steroids? I must know. How are you getting your testosterone? Or how were cis dudes getting steroided out? And were they? I need to know these things. So yeah, that's fantastic. But yeah, where was I? I got myself distracted with my own tangent. Oh no. This match, again, not many notes because it's just great. Go watch it. As far as Sting versus Scott Steiner, I did need to take a few, though, because there was a few of, you know, what will eventually become his finishing move, the Scorpion Death Drop. Everyone, watch it. It's awesome. I jumped around. I squealed. I was like, hey, it's his thing. I did the Leo pointing at the screen meme. Like, I know that move. That's his move. The second note, Ricky Puppy Boy Steiner, the brother, comes out, and he looks like he just got back from Margaritaville. Apparently he's a parrot head, and I needed everyone to know that. he's looking for his soap clip on a rope. That's terrible. Oh my gosh. Folks, I got so excited talking about professional wrestling in Roman times that I've worked myself up into a flurry. Good match, ends in a clusterfuck. Lex and Rick, when our friends are fighting, so we have to fight too, and the referee's like, you can't do that. And there was good stuff before that. Sting mostly just getting thrown around like he weighs nothing, because to Scott, he doesn't. At one point, Scott hits a STF on him, which is that move where he kind of like laid on his foot and then stretched his neck back, which is like not a move I was expecting to see from him. And Bobby says if he keeps doing that, Sting's going to be like a Great Dane and he can scratch his face with his back foot. That was worth taking note of. And I wish I had that power. But yeah, I've reached the end of Nitro, basically. So we come back from commercial and Bischoff's like, finally, we'll let this other guy say his piece. So Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, comes out one more time and like does the thing you want war, calls him Ken doll again, which, yes. Where he makes fun of Bischoff. So here you go. You know, he says he wants to be, you know, he wants billionaire Ted to get three of his best guys, maybe Sting, maybe Nacho Man, and two of his friends will beat their asses, because Bischoff's like, what do you mean we showing up? And it's like, it's great television, because like you're telling them I showed up, there's going to be more, so of course people are going to tune in next week for that. So I am sure that like in the middle of trying to plan a second take at a show somewhere, Vince McMahon is shit. I just did this. Like literally his contract was up at Sunday at midnight, and the very next Monday he did this, like the next day. So like that's how, like, it's on. It's war, baby. It's on. So yeah, that was any final thoughts on Nitro before we move on?
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
It's the first long one, and again, thank you for getting through the first long one.
Hey, sickos. Your girl, Guy Kendricks, is thinking it might be time to pack it in. Maybe I made a mistake thinking I could be my own woman, living my truth, and, you know, be a feminized clone of Michael Hayes that sells podcast listeners on supporting this show at patreon.com/mnffpod through my little transmissions, living free in this world outside of, you know, that toxic lab environment I was born in. Every time I try to get help, though, but people here, they treat me like I'm some sort of social pariah. I mean, whatever happened to the tolerant left of Minneapolis? Well, I made my way to the campus. If there's a bad street, it has to be around here, right? This lady looks super smart. Maybe she doesn't have a mean right hook either. Excuse me, ma'am. I'm terribly sorry, and please don't kick my ass, but I'm just trying to find my friends, maybe a queer coffee shop or something, and people have been very unhelpful.
Your eye makeup is the rebel flag, and that's actually pretty racist.
Eye makeup? You mean my birthmark? Oh, well, I had no idea. I was literally born last week.
Oh, no, honey. Come on, I'll tell you all about it on the way to the nearest Sephora.
And now we are on to Raw, which is fun in its own way. Basically, what happened with Raw, it's post-pay-per-view, which normally Raw wasn't done live. It was taped. And that was like a big thing because Nitro was always live. So they kind of had that upper hand. And they were able to get away with stuff like this. But after they would do big shows, the pay-per-views, they would have a live Raw. Because I'm guessing because they have all the stuff to do it already. So they're like, fuck it. Well, you know, we have the stuff on hand to broadcast live. Let's just keep doing it, you know? So they would do that to kind of like save money. So we come in to Raw and it's just mid Goldust getting freaky with it, basically. So yeah, that leads me to a question for you. How are you feeling about this very straight bastion of American masculinity that is professional wrestling so far?
It is really something. I mean, it is
semi-rhetorical.
I mean, it, like, Goldust notwithstanding, it's basically like a dude version of drag.
Yeah, basically. It's them being hyper masculine in a sense where it's like no one's actually a guy like that. You know that, right? But we didn't know that. So like it absolutely, but and then at the same time, you have Goldust giving us gender, of us who have transed our gender and like look back and go, I wonder if that did something to me. Because like Goldust and a lot of people, and like here he is being just flamboyantly gay because that's his whole thing. We had a previous guest who had an awakening because the Goldust was like, I am not normally into men, but it moved. Like, what the fuck? Like, so yeah, he's like that. So we start with the first round match for King of the Ring, which is like a tournament that they do, used to do. And it's Ultimate Warrior, who, this guy sucks. It's like, imagine if you met Hercules and he couldn't lift. You know, like, do you even bench, bro? Like, it's like, he's sold as this amazing cosmic being and he can't even wrestle. Everyone hates him. He sucks.
Yeah. And
he's still, yeah.
I was looking him up because like we were chatting and you said like he might be the most like universally hated man in all of wrestling, and I was like, yeah. Okay, well, like, I mean, I knew he was a dickhead like IRL, but yeah. I didn't realize he was, yeah, apparently he's bad at everything.
They didn't like him in the business either because he couldn't wrestle or make it look good. So it's on everyone else to make Warrior look good. No one likes that guy who doesn't, you know, a guy on the group project who's not pulling their share, you know. That's though. Goldust is doing a great job, makes him look amazing because that's Dustin's good at his job, to the best of his ability. Like, this is a decent length match. Like, this is a hard thing to get out of Warrior, is a match that goes on for almost 10 minutes because like he can't do anything. So this is pretty wild, but it ends like all of these matches do, in like a count out and bullshit and a draw because Warrior refuses to lose. And like, it's really that, it's just that, it's his ego. He won't put a guy over. He won't let the guy pin him. And it, so it doesn't make sense for you to just squash this guy because we need to not make him look weak because he has to have a job next week too, you know? And that's why everyone hates him, is because he's impossible to work with. In all of his matches, and like this, and everyone's just kind of like, whatever. And this is a tournament. Like, what are you going to do? So Vince tells us that because of this, it gets tossed out, and whoever wins, whoever was supposed to face the winner gets a bye. And that makes sense, because I'm sure there were plenty of byes in that locker room. Thank you. Thank you very much. Crickets? Okay, yeah. Terrible. This is why I have...
Terrible.
Yeah, no, I do it to y'all, and I do it to myself. We come back and they tell us about the failed pay-per-view. Lights went out as the strap match got going, and that's unfortunate. So basically what happened is they had a pay-per-view and there was a thunderstorm and it knocked the lights out. So they have to do the pay-per-view again the following Tuesday to like make it a whole show. Which is kind of funny because it's like, it's totally real. We're just going to replay the whole show as if it didn't happen, yeah. You know, because that's how this works. Patrons, you can check that out on Patreon. We just recorded that last night. That'll be out this week. Well, last week if you're hearing this. So it's weird. Vince is having a weird night while he's getting screwed by all the stuff on Nitro already. And this pleases me because fuck him. They go back to they show us a very unhappy Ted DiBiase and Stephen Austin of the Stone Cold Stephen Austins. His goatee has not yet grown all the way to full power. He's got a little silly facial expressions. He's not the mean beer drinker yet, you know?
Yeah. He's in fact, he doesn't say a word. Do you notice that? He doesn't say anything. He's just there.
He's there. It's very strange.
With like alcoholic William Riker, just like,
yeah.
You know, yelling whatever he's yelling. And like Steve Austin, he's like, he doesn't say anything, which was really interesting because like, if you don't know wrestling like me, you still at least know who Stone Cold Steve Austin is. And he has this whole persona. He's that guy, the like hardcore dude, but not there. He's not.
No, yeah, they weren't letting him be that yet. Cause like, yeah, no, that Steve Austin never shuts up. This guy didn't say anything. DiBiase though says he's so confident in Steven that he will leave the WWF if Steven loses, and Steven gives him a wonderful, like, what the fuck look like. He does not look pleased. This is happening because Ted DiBiase is absolutely leaving the company. So that's how they, he didn't, it basically it's like, okay, your contract's up. You're going to go tell everyone if you lose your leave, like loser leaves town. And that's how they used to get rid of people, basically. A lot of ways. You know, not everybody over WCW managing the NWO in like a month at this point. We have, let's see here, what else? It's a weird Raw, but it's a quick one. We got, what, Hillbilly Jim on commentary table? I don't know what else to say about that. There's nothing else to say about that guy. His character is explained in his name. You know, who is that? It's Hillbilly Jim. Enough said. That's what he is. It's what he does. He's Hillbilly Jim.
American male.
He's an American male. Very much so. He's a West Virginian male, which is some of our finest. At some point, I guess, the Smoking Guns beat the Pig Farmers, who Hillbilly Jim manages, for the titles, because I don't remember them like losing them, which is weird. But we are in this wonderfully gross arc for Sunny, the wonderful blonde lady who comes out with the guns. She initially used to be the manager for the Body Donnas because she's the girlfriend of one of the guys in there, but they don't know what to do with her. And because they are a bunch of misogynistic assholes who hate women, they're like, why don't we just have Sunny be the manager for whoever has the titles? And whenever the title changes hands, she dumps them and goes to the guy, to the new Chad. And later we will have incels and we won't think about how we might have done this to ourselves. But yeah, they Sunny's arc is what if incels? That's her character. What if incels? This show is great to talk to people like you, but I hate doing this podcast because the rose tinted glasses are smashed. They are I loved Sunny as a child, and now I'm going, oh, Sunny. They did you so dirty, girl. Like
I can appreciate that.
Yeah. Like I can appreciate that.
There are shows that I liked. Like the show Californication, for example. Mm-hmm. When it first came out, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I was a lot more ignorant back then. In retrospect, I am sure it is super problematic and I would find like 100 different things wrong with it. I'm not going to rewatch it. I'm not going to revisit it. I'm not going to critically examine it. I'm just going to remember it as a show that I liked and not think about it any further, because that's just what I don't want to rewatch it. And I don't, it won't bring me any positivity to learn about all the reasons that it's bad. And I know it's bad, but
yes,
I remember liking it and you can't take those feelings from me. So there you go.
So in that boat, because I did also enjoy that show. And even though I no longer drink, I'm choosing to. The only thing I take from that show is the three W's, weed, whiskey, and Warren. He finishes writing a book, Weed, Whiskey, and Warren Zevon. I'm like, that's okay. That's a good combo. But yes, so that's what I'm doing on this show. We get a little bit of a look at Sean and Bulldog's match the night before. This is a whole story about, to long story short, they're trying to insinuate that Sean attempted to cuckold the British Bulldog. Oh no, they did a whole thing about it. There was a whole match. It was so wild. The match ended
the draw, and basically Sean does a German suplex and doesn't bridge properly, and he is technically shoulders down pinned by the Bulldog, while Bulldog is also pinned.
No title change. Poor Bulldog back to the cuck chair. Like, that was the whole thing, folks. We've been doing this Jerry Springer bullshit for a month just to have it end in a draw. Huh. So have that again, patrons, you have that to look forward to. But more, it's Ahmed Johnson versus Vader with Owen Hart, Canada's own, on commentary, making the other commentators look bad. Because he's so good at this.
R.I.P. in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P. in peace. Oh, kid, I love Owen now. I unfortunately, sadly, was watching that show live as a child when Owen died. So, Owen is... I love Owen commentary. He's the funniest guy in wrestling. Most importantly, though, before this match gets going, there's a Sega Saturn commercial, and they showed the claymation cockroach.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the weirdest thing.
But did you get a kick out of that, too? Because I remember that as a small, disassociated child. I was like, that's that, that's Sega.
Well, it made me think, too, of, like, I don't know if you guys probably didn't have it in, because there's a Canadian pizza restaurant chain called Pizza Pizza, and it's not good. It's like, it is among the crappiest pizza I've ever had in my life. And I'm Sicilian. My family members, we've owned a lot of pizza restaurants in our time. People ask me what my ethnicity is, and I say my cousins Johnny and Vinny on a pizza place. So, you know, do the math. Anyway, so Pizza Pizza sucks. I'm not, this video was not sponsored by Pizza Pizza. They had a commercial with Bret Hart on it, and the promo was crack the cardboard, which was like, it was you get a pizza box, and there was like a strip you would tear off of the pizza box, and it would tell you like, you just want a free pizza, or you want a trip to Mexico, or whatever it was. And in the commercial, Bret the Hitman Hart walks in, and he's like, I want a pizza. And then the kid at the counter is like, hey Bret, do you want two pizzas for only $15.99? And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna crack the cardboard. And so he like tears off the piece of cardboard, and in the foreground, it's like him like being really tough because he broke a pizza box.
You get it, Bret.
I mean, I did one earlier when I took the recycling out, but I'm super macho. So it's like him like being like, look how strong I am. And the kid in the background being like, oh my God. It's pretty amazing. I'm going to look it up. I'll send it to you.
Please do. No, please send it to me so I can link to it in the show notes, because people need that in their lives. That's fucking amazing. Yes. It's
really something.
Oh, fucking national heroes. The fucking Hart family. I love them. God damn. We American national wrestling heroes are way less cool and way more dead. Canadian national wrestling family heroes are dead of Vince McMahon, which is unfortunate. This match, though, also wild. So Ahmed Johnson, he has a reputation for hurting people because he doesn't know how to work yet, and his moves, like, he doesn't know how to make his moves hurt less. He just actually does it, which is not great. And then you have Vader, who is known for hurting people because he does know how to work and chooses not to. Fuck you. yay. And to be fair, that's how he was taught in Japan. Because you stiff, you lay it at the fuck in. It looks more real because it is, basically. And in Japan, they would have like shoot style too, where like the end of like the finish is predetermined, but before the finish, you just go out there and fight, basically, and you would have to make it entertaining, but like you're actually getting hurt. It's wild. I love watching that shit for my own weird reasons, because it's like, what if UFC was also scripted like wrestling, basically? Which is weird to think of, because like people lose like the ability to do second grade math from UFC, you know? Like, why would you do that if you weren't trying to actually prove something? I don't know. seems weird to me. But that's where Vader comes from. So he broken men's backs in the ring with a power bomb. He broke a guy's back once.
Oh geez.
Yeah, and I guess he felt real bad about it after the fact, but like that doesn't unbreak the guy's back. There was a Dark Side of the Ring on Vice recently. It was a recent episode, did an episode on Vader, and they talked to the guy whose back he broke. And he was like, yeah, no, he just kind of something switched in his brain, and he just started bullying me, basically, like, you piece of shit, fuck you. And like all of a sudden he wasn't working anymore, and he was just racist, actually. Later, not a great guy. Apparently not a great guy. Other people say he was a big sweetheart. Other people say he's a bully. That's wrestling. You get everything a wrestler tells you in an interview should be taken with a grain of salt. That's just it, because like they, for a while there, especially as you go further back, because like lying for a living was absolutely a part of it. They were expected to like keep up the lie, even though but you were in on it, you know, everyone's lying to each other and that's the fun. But like you get people who take it so seriously that they like beat up on people and it's like, don't do that. so this is a weird match. And for the most part, it's just the two of them beating the shit out of each other for the rest of the show. And it kind of fucking rules, in my opinion. And Owen Hart's in like a white shirt and tie playing Sportcaster. It's amazing. Like, this is also, watch it. This is another one to watch. It's been a very watchable Raw. For a show that has Ultimate Warrior on it, that's saying a lot, to be honest. but yeah, this match, Ahmed is tough with Vader. He throws him around a little bit. He suplexes him even, like, wow. But Vader basically no-sells it, though, and then power slams him and goes for a Vader bomb. But he does it again, folks. Vader is, as you can see, a very large man. So very large men don't generally do backflips. Vader was known for doing backflips in the air every so once in a while. So he did it this time, and it's like, holy shit, he went for it, but he missed. And that had to hurt. Again, not fake, staged. That has to hurt. There's no way that doesn't hurt. Just landing on nothing. So, So Ahmed uses this as a good way to get some upper hand out of it. Because, you know, he fucked up. That was stupid. You should have just done the Vader bomb, sir. I like seeing you do flippy, but don't. It takes too long. He clotheslines the shit out of Vader a few times, slams him. This should be it, but then Corny, the manager, does the distracty thing. Ahmed pulls him in. It's a big clusterfuck. We've seen this so many times already because they did it a bunch in Nitro, too. It's another distract the ref so I can fuck him up kind of moment. So he gets distracted.
And it's always so obvious, too.
Yeah, right? Like, all these refs need to get their eyes checked. Like, just right behind you, just over there. And you have a crowd of people going, look behind you. silliness. So it works again, though. Owen comes off the top rope and hits Ahmed in the head with his cast-covered arm. It looked beautiful. Again, Owen Hart. Wow. You made that look so good. It knocks out Ahmed. It knocks him out so bad that they have to do a stretcher job on him. And here we go. 90s queer phobia.
Yeah, this part sucked.
This part really sucked. This part got GLAAD involved. They weren't being wild. This is like they got to the point where they're like, look, people die because of the gay panic defense. Like people die because of this. You can't just make a joke about it or do it for an angle. Because basically Ahmed gets stretchered out and Goldust shows up, and I will give him this too. I've heard people talk about this happening and like, oh, Goldust comes out and kisses him while he's passed out. That's not what happened. It's very silly, but from what I watched, Goldust looked like he was actually trying to blow air into his mouth. And I'm like, you know, it's a thin line, but I want to give Goldust credit for playing it that way. You know what?
Like, not to brag or anything, but I've kissed girls before, and like,
Candle.
Right? And like, kisses don't look like that. Kisses don't look like that. It's not the same thing.
It was not the same thing. Like, he looked like he was actually trying to do mouth to mouth, which is, you know, probably not helpful. You know, like, he's clearly not an EMT, but he's like, I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna save your life. Ahmed wakes up and realizes that there's gold on his lips and puts two and three together and freaks the fuck out. And the queer saved his life, and it freaked him out so bad that he tried to murder Bob Holly, which was, you know, I get it. I love making fun of Bob Holly. He had a look going. And he goes after Mark Marrow, who, again, looks fabulous, but we're not going to talk about it. I could get eyeliner tips from Mark Marrow. That's neither here nor there. But, he's just looking for him. Mark points him towards the right door. There's a dude with a mullet and a mustache who's like, "She's not here, man." And I got to give you this. This is a freebie, folks. Last night for the pay-per-view watch party, we had a lot of former guests who come and watch. Arturo Garcia was there last night in the chat, and he said it looked like there was an Outrunner backstage. For AEW fans, they will know what that means. You don't know what that means. There's a wrestling tag team who are current wrestlers who look like that guy did. Like their whole thing is like they shave their head to look like Hulk Hogan going bald. Like they look like they're like old 80s wrestlers, but they're the youngest guys in wrestling. Like, so they like, okay. It's the joke is that they've been around for like decades, but not really, you know. It's just an 80s nostalgia gimmick. It's very fun, but he looks like this guy. So yeah, all of this sucks. It's gay panic horseshit. I feel like it's the only idea they have for Goldust is this. They don't know what to do with him outside of this. They just keep doing versions of this. I don't think they expected the fans to continue to like him as much as they did at this point. Like, I think they figured that he would have been back to the drawing board at this point. Because like Vince gave Dustin Rhodes this gimmick because he's the son of Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, who Vince hates with a passion. So Dustin Rhodes showed up and was like, I'm going to make you the faggot and be queer, smeared, and all this shit and all this because I hate your dad and fuck you forever. And instead, Dustin's like, I'm going to be the best drag queen of all time. And I'm going to like do these performances where I quote movies and shit and make it all double entendre. And it's going to be amazing. And people are going to love me anyways. And yay. That's what he did. And it worked. But because of that, I feel like they don't know what to do with them. So, that's how they ended Raw. It's just that. It's just them being gay. A historic week of wrestling in 1996, and it ends on a hate crime. Yay.
It's unfortunate, because I kind of like that Ahmed Johnson. I kind of liked his vibe, too, until that. Like, he seemed like, I mean, he looks like a bulldog, right? Like, he's got, like, he's not British bulldog, but he looks like a bulldog. I liked his vibe until that, and was like, oh, no, I don't like you now.
Yeah, and a similar thing happens to him, too, where, like, he's got a lot of potential, but they don't listen, you know? and they're like, you know, I write what I know, and all I know is racism and misogyny, so I don't understand what to do with you, but you look amazing, you know? like, and it just happens
right,
again.
Right.
Holy crap.
Oh, boy.
We did it in episodes. I'm so proud of you. 4 episodes, really.
I did. It was fun. I liked it.
Yay. I'm so happy. Did you have any final thoughts on Raw overall before we round this out?
I'm just sending you an image here of Ahmed Johnson and wondering how on earth he could possibly be homophobic.
My God.
And I'm sure you'll put this in the show notes as well. So that people can understand that this man being homophobic doesn't make any sense. This is very silly.
He is too sexy for most fabrics, Ahmed. Like, goddamn. Is again, I love wrestling. Wrestling where it's so hyper masculine that it just loops back around to gay. It's the greatest thing. Wrestling is gay and it will always be gay. Wrestling is queer, and that's why I have a show. So the last two questions before I let you out of here. Did you have a favorite match this week? Something that tickled you more than anything else?
I liked the one where like everyone came out at once to start fighting. Like, just like, what? Who was it? Where like, the two of them were fighting, and then like I think it was Sting and what's his name? Poodlehead.
Sting and Poodlehead, Scott Snyder, Scooter. Yeah, Scott because Snyder, eventually. Right.
And just like everybody who'd been on the show thus far came out to like stop each other from fighting and also fight.
Yes, the run-in of everyone. I love that.
Which was very funny.
Yes, and like it works so well. That's another one of those things where like it works so well and then Nitro's going to do it to death. But it worked this time. It's very fun. They recently did that at an AEW, like a recent show where like the evil heel champions lost and the babyfaces won the belts back after like this long reign of the evil guys being in charge, and all the good guys ran out to the ring and celebrated together. And I was like, more of that. I love when people run out to the ring and like pop champagne. Like that's good stuff. And then I would ask what you, because this is a war, we ask who won this week, between Nitro and Raw, which one did you like more?
The WCW one is Nitro, right?
Is Nitro. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to remember. I think that one, because the like undercurrent of like something is happening behind the scenes sort of thing, I think is really interesting. I didn't know that Razor Ramon slash whatever his not Razor Ramon name is, Scott Hall. Yeah. I didn't realize that he was not a WCW guy. And so I didn't realize, like, I'm sure at the time that would have been like,
but it didn't hit you.
Yeah, that was lost on me. That would have been like, I don't know, like the guitar player from your favorite band showing up to jam with your other favorite band. Like that would have been like,
it's like a crossover.
Where it's like, if you're not a fan of either of those bands, you'd be like, what's the big deal? It's just some dudes playing guitar. But like, it's like, don't you understand? Like Courtney Love is jamming with L7 right now. Like this is really awesome, right? Like it.
Everyone is amazing, and we are all doll parts at the same time. It's fantastic. No, exactly.
So it was lost on me to a certain extent, but now that I understand that more, that's clearly
won. Yeah, I was gonna say it's odd because historically. We can look back and say Nitro very won. Like you said, like clearly, historically, in the long run, Nitro won this night because it was such a big deal. And I gave it to them too. But I will say, for the record, for those playing along at home, on the wrestling alone, it was hard to call for me. And I want to take note of that. If anyone is taking note of these things, someone should be taking note of these things. I'm giving it to Nitro, but it was difficult. The graps were good all around. And I'm happy to say at the end of this that on a historic week, there was good graps. It wasn't all story. And I think that's a really cool thing. Even if the end result is the complete and utter downfall of my country and inevitably the way the world works. And I hate it. We will build back better. But Jesus. Precisely. My gosh. The neo kayfabe of it all sucks for everyone. And on that note, what would you like to plug, if anything? Tell people where to find you, to watch your things. Yay. The other half of the reason I have my mutuals on, so you can tell people where to find their stuff.
What a segue. Yeah, on that note, the world is ending. Like, comment, subscribe.
Yes.
Good Lord. My YouTube channel, it's called We Have Always Existed. It is a history of transgender lives in the ancient Mediterranean. I touch on the Near East occasionally as well, but it's mostly the ancient Mediterranean. It's youtube.com/@transgenderancienthistory. You can also follow me on Blue Sky @transgenderhistory. I don't know, buy my book too. It's going to be out of print pretty soon because my publisher is going out of business. So I'm going to have to self-publish it from here, which is fine. It's whatever. so if you want a copy of it through the publisher, buy it now because you're not going to be able to get it again soon. It is called, what the hell is it called? Wow. Good job, Sophie. You wrote a book and you don't remember the name. It's called The Bottom Line is what it's called.
I was going to say, I know, I know.
Yes, the weird kid in the back.
Yes, yeah, The Bottom Line. It's The Bottom Line. The weird yes, kid called, in the back.
It's called The Bottom Line. The book, it's a novel. I wrote it. I took a long time to write it. It took me about a decade to write the damn thing. So, I don't know. Somebody buy it and read it because, I don't know.
Took you a decade to write the damn thing. It's behind you. I can see it.
It's a yes, yes. Well, this is not a video for those of us, those of you listening at home. But that's true. It is on my shelf. Yes. It's a story about, it's about identity. It's about, how we find meaning in the world, how we find meaning in our lives, and what happens when that's taken away from us. And I explore that through automation. So my characters are construction workers whose jobs are being replaced by robots. And in the book, there's a, call it a universal basic income, something like that, where if you lose your job to automation, it's not, oh my God, how do I feed my family? How do I pay my bills? Whatever. It's what do I do with my life? And
which is its own kind of thing to really be thinking about, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, like, if you have hobbies, if you have interests, if you are a well-rounded individual, that might be awesome. I don't have to work for a dollar anymore. I can spend time writing more books or doing more wrestling podcasts or whatever it is you like to do with your spare time. But if you're somebody who really defines themselves through their work, believe it or not, I used to work on a construction crew once upon a time. And if you really define yourself through your work, then such a world might be horrible. So, just some gentle existential questions to be pondering while you gently allow yourself to doze off to sleep.
Yeah, no, I think that is all good things. You should go get it, you should buy it, you should read it, you should send money to Sophie, you should watch Sophie's things. I have declared it. I don't have much power. And thank y'all for giving me this power. I am drunk with it now by being here and listening. thank you for hanging out. Thank you for making it happen after various back and forth. It was a very wonderful time, and we will see you next week for Act 2 of the Monday Night Wars and more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Fake Fights. Okay, bye.